from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
A lot of good football guests coming up here on Wisconsin Sports Daily to give you all the best draft coverage that we possibly can. One of the best doing it right now is Ross Uglum. He joins us now on Wisconsin Sports Daily, publisher of the Packer Report. Follow him on Twitter at Ross Uglum. Ross, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I was telling the other guy, totally my fault. I thought it was tomorrow at 3:20, but I'm locked in. I'm ready to go. It was a little bit of a surprise call, but I'm good.
Well, maybe there's a miscommunication on my part. I was trying to book like 100 guests today for the rest of the week, and maybe I miscommunicated.
No,
so very well could be my fault.
Text. I read the text. It is 100% reading comprehension on me, but
oh, okay.
I just finished our last, before I get to Green Bay, I guess, I just finished our last daily draft episode with kind of our big preview for everybody on Thursday to kind of pass the time away until 7 o'clock. So my brain's already in the correct space. We're going to be totally fine.
All right, Ross, where do people find that your latest podcast?
Yeah. So I've been doing, working with the Pack-A-Day podcast with Andy Herman, and we developed a little something with our buddies over at Badger State Brewing in Green Bay called the Daily Draft. Obviously draft beer, good synergy there.
Makes sense. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's been I would say 10 to 18 minute pod most days. And we've been doing three things primarily. You know, every Monday I'll do a mock draft Monday. Super fun. I'll go through usually a multi-round because I don't just want to break down one pick. But, you know, one of the big boys, Kuiper, Jordan Reed at ESPN, Pro Football Focus, NFL.com, CBS, some big national mock with more than one round. We'll kind of go through it from a Packers perspective, because obviously the national guys know a lot, but they don't always know kind of what each specific team does. And we've really, I think, done a good job of sort of narrowing down, you know, how Brian thinks, what he got from Ted, who got it from Ron, those kind of things. So we'll sort of, you know, talk about, well, how Packers-y is this pick? Does it make sense for what they really do? For example, PFF had a 7-round mock and they took Nate Wiggins. I love Nate Wiggins, but Nate Wiggins showed up to the combine at 175 pounds.
Yep.
The Packers haven't basically ever in the Wolf Thompson era with Goody taken one less than 186 pounds, and most of them were 193 or more. Nate Wiggins would be a tremendous departure from what they value at the cornerback position.
Ross, can I ask you a question about that?
Go ahead. Yeah.
So in the NBA, you draft an 18-year-old kid, whatever, and he's thin, you add muscle. Depending on his frame, you could tell whether or not he can handle that muscle and play with that muscle. I mean, Giannis is one example of guys that added muscle over the course of time. Why doesn't that same logic apply to a cornerback or a wide receiver that you can add muscle to over the course of time? Why would that not apply, I guess, and why that would restrict you from drafting somebody?
I don't know that it does necessarily. And what I mean by that is, and maybe too, I'd like to see, and that's part of research that we haven't done. Jaden Reed's a great example. Jaden Reed was really close to everything that they normally like to do, except he was light. In fact, he was so light, most people just sort of ignored him. Well, if you read Packers.com, Wes Hodgkins told us, like, the first thing they asked Reed to do was get up to 195, which is their historical, it's not public information, but in general, the Packers prefer their wide receivers to be 195 pounds or more, and a lot of that has to do with the run game, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm not saying that Nate Wiggins, like, can't put on weight. Most of our stuff is, people argue with you, right? And that's fine. Like, I'm cool to have discussions. But I'll just run this down for you really quick. Really, really quick. Carrington Valentine was 193. Stokes, 194. Shamar John Charles is the outlier at 184. Then you talk about Holman at 196. Jair at 196. Josh Jackson at 196. Kevin King at 200. Demarius Randall was 196. Quentin Rollins was 195. And you can keep going down the list. Devon House is 200 pounds. So it's not like they can't put weight on these guys. But you just look at the data that you're presented with,
sure.
And it's, okay, we have this list of 11 cornerbacks. What sticks out to you? Holy cow, almost everyone is at least 193 pounds. And especially in this cornerback class, that's kind of rare. And, you know, why do they value that? I'm not sure. You'd have to ask. I think part of it's, you know, tackling, theoretically probably staying healthy. You know, do the super thin corners get nicked up more? I don't know. But we've just kind of done a ton of research, and okay, what sticks out to us about the corners that the Packers take? And like I said, holy cow, most of these guys are between 195 to 200 pounds, and that's just very much like not Wiggins. So that's what we kind of do on Mock Draft Monday as far as how Packersy are these picks. Then the second thing we do is prospect primers. Those are the shorter videos, break down one prospect per day. And finally, a little bit longer video/podcast. We have been getting kind of, you know, my draft buddies from around the internet, if you will, to each break down a position. I have had fun. Trevor Sikkema from Pro Football Focus did linebackers with me. Ryan Roberts from Athlon Sports Illustrated did interior defensive linemen. Acme Packing Company's Justice Mosqueda did edges. Like we've done a lot of fun stuff with a lot of really cool people. Those are closer to 30, 40 minutes. So that's kind of what we've had going on the draft content side from a...
I think some people coming into this thing thought that, okay, well, they've got 11 picks. That's more than enough. They're good. Maybe they move up in the first round. Maybe they trade back into the first round after they make the pick at 25 and try and get higher end talent there in the first round. I've been saying the whole time that I think they move back from 25 because there's so much talent there in the second round, especially, and even in the third round, I think, where if they move back 25 to 30 or 25 into the early second, I don't think there's a huge drop-off in talent necessarily. You can either add picks for this year or for next year. Maybe you get a third for 2025, but you add more capital. Goody was pretty much asked about it and said that he wants 13 or 14 picks, possibly, in this draft at the end of the day. Do you think they stay at 25, or do you think they move back?
I mean, gun to your head, I think the easy answer is that they stay and pick. They've moved around in the past, but also even like when they had the most flexibility ever after the Davante Adams trade, and they had two picks in four picks, 22 and 25 in the first round, and you just assumed that they were going to do some moving around.
Right.
They just didn't. They just picked. They just picked when it was LVN. They just picked when it was Stokes. They just picked when it was Gary. So that's obviously the higher batting average thing. For me, though, I've got 20, now looking at my big board, I got 26 guys with first-round grades. That's pretty normal for an NFL team. I'm not saying, like, I'm an NFL team. I'm obviously not or qualified to run a team, but that's pretty common. You know, teams will have between 20 and 25 first-round grades. Your hope, obviously, if you're the Packers, and by the way, four of those first-round grades from your QBs.
Right.
So really, it's 22 if you're the Green Bay Packers. And odds would say, you know, someone from outside of those first round grade is going to go, like the Lions taking Jahmyr Gibbs last year. And a number, someone takes a Bo Nix, another quarterback who I don't have a first round grade on, or someone goes crazy over Xavier Worthy because he ran a 4.21, or A.D. Mitchell because he's a super athlete, or, you know, I don't personally have a first round grade on Alabama offensive tackle J.C. Latham, but I bet he goes before Green Bay picks.
Probably.
So, you know, your hope is that if you're sitting there at 25, and let's say the Packers have 21 first round grades, well, if one or two of the guys that they actually have a first round grade on are there, then pick. But if not, I agree with you. I think the strength of this draft, and I'll, looking at my rankings now, I will say pick 84. Pick 25 to pick 84, or player 25 to player 84 to me in this draft. Man, there's a lot of good players. And so I think if you could move, and you would, I mean, that would be the standard operating procedure. If you were able to trade down to 30 or down to 31 or down to 32, you would get a top 100 pick back. It's just, that's the cost of doing business. Adding another one of those guys to me would be ideal, especially if you get to that pick. And I've got kind of a shelf of five corners, which would be Cooper DeJean, Nate Wiggins, who I've said they're probably not even interested in, Terry and Arnold, who they very much should be interested in, and then Kool-Aid McKinstry, who they actually visited. I have a pretty significant gap between Kool-Aid at corner five and then corner six for me, who is Iowa State's TJ Tampa. So if none of those corners are available, if Fatanu is gone, if Fuaga is gone, and obviously Alton Fashanu would probably be gone as well at offensive tackle. If one of the four edge rushers, you know, they just, Preston Smith's not going to play forever, and they just lost Enagbare to a late injury. Don't be shocked if one of the four edge rushers everybody likes is there at 25. Like, don't be blown away if they do that again. But if you take the wide receivers out that sort of, for me at least, hang out there, which is LSU's Brian Thomas Jr. and Xavier Worthy, and you call that not a need for the Packers, which I think is fair. And you take out Jackson Powers Johnson and just say, oh, the Packers aren't going to take a center in round one. It's just not what they do, which is true. It is not what they do. They don't take centers in the first round. I think it's very possible that you could get a bunch of guys that they have high second round grades on available at 25. And then absolutely 100%, the prudent thing would be, you know, maybe not how, but how can we grab, you know, one more top 100 pick and still get somebody from this tier of high second round grades, you know, that we have?
Well, I mean, that's what you want is you want Nix or Penix to fall. And then you want somebody that needs a quarterback to probably try to move up. Or if we're talking about the Niners or the Chiefs or that type of deal, wanting some receiver that they really want to be there to get in front of a couple of other teams to get the receiver they want if you want to stay there in the first round. I think from my perspective looking at this, and Goody talking about how, yeah, Andy Herman brought it up the other day when he was on, about tackles. And, yeah, bigger, athletic, faster. But then he follows it up by saying, yeah, but we like position versatility. Well, okay, if we're going to say position versatility, that means you like tackles that can play guard, guards that can play tackle. So we're talking, you know, Zach Tom, Elton Jenkins, those type of guys. Are those type of guys still there at the top of two?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know about 41 necessarily. So the guys you're talking about, we're putting all cards on
the kid from Arizona, the Jordan Morgan, yeah, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So the guys you kind of have to throw out, right? Latham, Alabama.
Yep.
Mims, Georgia.
That's who I like.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
There's lots of argument about that.
I like him.
And I do too. He's my final first round grade. Mims is my final first round grade. Here's what I'll tell you. Historically, he is significantly taller than what they do, significantly heavier than what they do. We don't know his agility numbers, and the short shuttle is incredibly important to what the Packers do on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. That test is very key for them. And the fewest amount of starts for any Packer offensive lineman that has been taken in the first four rounds, and basically also like ever, is 28.
And his is 8.
And his is 8.
Yeah,
so he
lovely.
He would be so far away from what they do. And a little bit Guyton, Tyler Guyton hits a lot of their athletic stuff. It would be very hard to see moving him into guard. And honestly, there's no proof he can play left tackle either. And I think one of the things Brian said almost specifically was, we don't want, or we try to stay away from one position players.
Yep.
I think all three of the guys I just named in Guyton, Mims, and Latham are right tackles.
Yep.
And that's fine. You can be a right tackle. Brian Bulaga was a right tackle. Nobody cared. But they also probably thought Brian could, with his, you know, height and short arms, they probably thought if it didn't work out at right tackle, he was going to be an awesome guard. And actually, before he blew out his knee and they discovered David Bakhtiari, they had moved him to left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's not Latham, Mims, or Guyton, I don't think, personally. As far as guys that make a ton of sense to me, of what we're sort of talking about, I think there's four, and one of them sort of not maybe necessarily with these other three where I have them ranked. But when you're talking about kind of goody offensive line that the Packers might be looking at at 25 or 41, Fuad Tanu from Washington would be great. I think most people think he'll be gone.
Agreed.
So that's fine. Jordan Morgan, Arizona. Graham Barton is a super Packer.
He's the obvious. Yeah.
Yep, he's the obvious one. Cooper Beebe has short arms, but he does everything else that they like and has spent...
What is he, 6'3"? I mean, he can't play tackle. He's really only a guard, right? Kansas
guard,
State
center
guy?
Guard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's guard, center, guard. And I think tackle in an emergency, sort of in the way that TJ Lang was a tackle in an emergency.
Good point, yeah.
But it can do it. Had a full season of right tackle at Kansas State, and he's 6'3 and some change. I don't think he's a pro tackle. Let me be very clear about that. 6'3 and some change, short arms, but a full season of right tackle in the Big 12, a full season of left tackle in the Big 12, and two seasons at left guard. And I think they probably think he has left guard, center, right guard versatility, right? And they do take guys like that. I think Elton Jenkins is a little bit like that, even though they've let him play tackle. I think they think Myers can play guard. They haven't done it, but I think they think Myers can play guard. And then the fourth one that I'll kind of point folks towards as far as an actual Packers fit, and he is heavy, not super heavy, but he is heavy in the sense that I would say they'll probably play him at guard initially. I think he'd be more of like a Sean Ryan pick, and that is Kingsley Suamataia from
BYU.
From BYU.
Everybody is so all over the board on this kid. You read one guy, he loves him. You read another guy, he's not as high on him. This dude, they're all over the board on this kid.
He's a project, and I fully admit that. I mean, he's got a mid-second round grade for me. I have him ranked just, ever so slightly, trying to find, behind Guyton, like sort of a quarter of a round behind Guyton. Who I also think is a project, but Suamataia, is a transfer from Oregon. He's played a lot of football, played tackle, probably a little bit short for tackle, though he does have nice long arms, but ran super well. The Packers care on the offensive line a ton about broad jump. That was a good test for him. 31 on the bench is really impressive, especially for a guy with long arms. But like I said, at 326, they're going to try him inside first. I mean, really, the Kingsley Suamataia pick, as I mentioned, would remind me the most of the Sean Ryan pick.
Yeah, and Sean Ryan, I don't know what to make of that dude, to be honest with you. I mean, they tried the whole rotation with him and running, which I thought was dumb at the point, but it motivated running or whatever, and running played much better after LaFleur started doing that, just like he was screwing around with left tackle the same. That's the thing that blows my mind more than anything else. Like, You heard Stenovich not commit to the left tackle. You heard LaFleur not commit to the left tackle. And yet nobody's talking about this team possibly moving up to take one of the two premier left tackles in this draft. I'm kind of blown away by that. They're just going to let Rasheed Walker go out there and play left tackle again and think he's going to be fine.
Yeah, we're going to disagree on that. You and I are going to disagree on that. Sheed was legitimately good for the second half of the season. I'm not saying that they absolutely won't. And by the way, I think the backup left tackle, if anything were to go, I mean, they have two. The backup left tackle is probably Elton Jenkins, who played well there.
As long as it's not Dillard, that's fine.
And ultimately, although Dillard was fine in Philly, I'm not going to defend Dillard's play in Tennessee. Dillard played decent, not like Pro Bowl level, but you go watch his Philly tape at left tackle. It was fine. I'm actually excited for them to give Dillard to Stenovich. I am. And Butkus, and see, kind of what they do, what they're able to do. And I know he's 28. It's a late, development track. We're talking about development tracks. But Mike Leach, God rest his soul and God bless him, is an innovator
yep.
to no end. What he asked his offensive lineman to do was just not NFL stuff. And you'll see that with a lot of Washington State offensive linemen that have these amazing pass pro numbers. And it's like, Cole Madison was a great, and who knows what would have happened with Cole, but Cole Madison was a great example. The guy the Packers took in the fifth round, it's like, oh, he doesn't allow the sacks. And you watch Mike Leach offense, the ball's out. There are no sacks. The ball is out. That's his offense. So, I knew Dillard was going to be a project. Anyway, in general, I will just say Sheed was good. And part of that is bias. I actually had Sheed as a top 100 player. I was blown away that he was available in the seventh round.
Why do you think he fell?
A part of it, frankly, is I think a lack of athletic testing. I think he was hurt. And that doesn't explain four rounds, right? But he didn't do anything. I think it was an injury, but he didn't do anything. He didn't run. He didn't do agilities. He didn't bench. He didn't jump. He didn't do anything. So he just became this total enigma. You know, I don't from a, just from an athletic testing standpoint, who knew if he was a terrible athlete? You try to take some of that on film, but there's a reason these guys do the combines. There's a reason these guys do the pro days. That information is important. And you'll see guys go much higher that are too hurt to test. You will. But I think that was a big part of it. And I think he was a bit of a project, and you saw certainly that improvement. But I think he's above. I think he's an above average NFL left tackle. Not elite. He's not Bakhtiari. He's not anything like that.
Correct.
But
yep.
I think at the end of the season, for the last 10 weeks, he was an above average NFL left tackle, specifically, certainly an above average pass protector. And that's what you're doing. You're trying to keep Jordan Love alive. If you can pay that $580,000 a year, that's tremendous.
Sure.
That's an unbelievable value to have your left tackle making no money. And it goes beyond that financially, but he's also in a league where a lot of the linemen stink, and specifically some of the left tackles stink. It's just pretty cool to have a 24-year-old left tackle that can play on a rookie contract.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously get that. I'm just saying, if you go back and look at the end of the season, Stanovich wouldn't really commit to him. Said, oh, he's got a lot of growing to do. I'm not going to sit here and say he's a left tackle of the future. LaFleur wouldn't go down that path either with him. So you listen to both of those, I'm just like, okay, well, maybe left tackle is going to be something they're going to explore, or they're going to move somebody else to left tackle. But nobody's really talked about it since those two press conferences, so I think the understanding is now that that's his job. And really what we're talking about here is, where is Zach Tom moving? Number one, is he moving or is he staying at right tackle? And if he's staying there, then you're really only looking to replace a guard, and that's it on the line.
Exactly. And that's the big thing to me, too, is we're talking about resources. You know, when we're talking about the draft, what's the best use of resources? And look, like, Sheed may never even be a Pro Bowler. And I get that fully in. And I think there are plenty of project-type tackles that you could even take in the mid-rounds if you're looking, you know, to try and do something different at the left tackle position. I would not – and Fashanu, I think, could even potentially have like a Bulaga-esque fall. I don't understand what's going on with Fashanu. I think he's a very, very clean prospect. But same with Ault. I would not burn the draft capital that you would have to burn to go up to get them to upgrade yourself from Sheed to whatever that is. That upgrade from Sheed to Fashanu, certainly after getting the top six, the upgrade from Sheed to Ault, you would almost have to give away what it takes to go get a quarterback.
But what if that means that Sheed goes to right tackle and then you're able to slide Tom into guard?
I still don't care that much, because Myers to me is fine for a year, and then you look at the good centers that they've actually had.
Oh yeah,
they took yep. Corey Linsley in round five, and they took Scott Wells in round six.
Yep,
they can make up a center, right? Or Go find a good guard, or maybe Ryan develops and is awesome, and you take another guard, and Elton Jenkins can play some center. You know, they've got a lot of different things that they can do on the interior. I definitely understand where you're coming from. I really do. I just frankly, I'm fine with them taking a tackle or an offensive lineman at 25. I don't know that I think it's the most likely outcome, but I'd be very fine with it. I just would not burn, like, basically – quarterback trade up level resources to go get a left tackle in the top six, when how many times have I shown that I can take like the guy drafted 130th and make him a Pro Bowler?
Absolutely.
How many times do the Packers have to do that? They have to prove that they can take TJ Lang, Josh Sitton, JC Treader, David Bakhtiari, Zach Tom, whatever. And you have the Bulaga thing worked out, and that's great, but the Sherrod thing didn't. The Myers thing hasn't. The Spriggs thing sure didn't.
Oh, Spriggs.
So I'm saying, like, I don't know. To me, it's just, you know, shotgun approach. Take one in round three, take one in round five, take one in round seven. Let's see who can play.
I'm with you. Ross Uglum, who I've kept way, way too long. I didn't realize what time it was. I could just talk to this dude forever. Publisher of the Packer Report. If you think
there's lots of argument about that.
I like him.
And I do, too. He's my final first-round grade. Mims is my final first-round grade. Here's what I'll tell you. Historically, he is significantly taller than what they do, significantly heavier than what they do. We don't know his agility numbers, and the short shuttle is incredibly important to what the Packers do on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. That test is very key for them. And the fewest amount of starts for any Packer offensive lineman that has been taken in the first four rounds, and basically also like ever, is 28.
And his is 8.
And his is 8.
Yeah,
so he would be so far away from what they do. And a little bit Tyler Guyton hits a lot of their athletic stuff. It would be very hard to see moving him into guard. And honestly, there's no proof he can play left tackle either. And I think one of the things Brian said almost specifically was, we don't want, or we try to stay away from one position players.
Yep.
I think all three of the guys I just named in Guyton, Mims, and Latham are right tackles.
Yep.
And that's fine. You can be a right tackle. Brian Bulaga was a right tackle. Nobody cared. But they also probably thought Brian could, with his, you know, height and short arms, they probably thought if it didn't work out at right tackle, he was going to be an awesome guard. And actually, before he blew out his knee and they discovered David Bakhtiari, they had moved him to left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's not Latham, Mims, or Guyton, I don't think, personally. As far as guys that make a ton of sense to me, of what we're sort of talking about, I think there's four, and one of them sort of not maybe necessarily with these other three where I have them ranked. But when you're talking about kind of goody offensive line that the Packers might be looking at at 25 or 41, Fad Tanu from Washington would be great. I think most people think he'll be gone.
Agreed.
So that's fine. Jordan Morgan, Arizona. Graham Barton is a super Packer.
He's the obvious. Yeah.
Yep, he's the obvious one. Cooper Beebe has short arms, but he does everything else that they like and has spent...
What is he, 6'3"? I mean, he can't play tackle. He's really only a guard, right? Kansas
guard,
State
center
guy?
Guard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's guard, center, guard. And I think tackle in an emergency, sort of in the way that TJ Lang was a tackle in an emergency.
Good point, yeah.
But can do it. Had a full season of right tackle at Kansas State, and he's 6'3 and some change. I don't think he's a pro tackle. Let me be very clear about that. 6'3 and some change, short arms, but a full season of right tackle in the Big 12, a full season of left tackle in the Big 12, and two seasons at left guard. And I think they probably think he has left guard, center, right guard versatility. Right. And they do take guys like that. I think Elton Jenkins is a little bit like that, even though they've let him play tackle. I think they think Myers can play guard. They haven't done it, but I think they think Myers can play guard. And then the fourth one that I'll kind of point folks towards as far as an actual Packers fit, and he is heavy, not super heavy, but he is heavy in the sense that I would say they'll probably play him at guard initially. I think he'd be more of like a Sean Ryan pick, and that is Kingsley Suamataia from
BYU.
From BYU.
Everybody is so all over the board on this kid. You read one guy, he loves him. You read another guy, he's not as high on him. This dude, they're all over the board on this kid.
He's a project, and I fully admit that. I mean, he's got a mid-second-round grade for me. I have him ranked just, you know, ever so slightly trying to find, you know, behind Guyton, like sort of a quarter of a round behind Guyton, who I also think is a project. But Suamataia, you know, is a transfer from Oregon. He's played a lot of football, played tackle, you know, probably a little bit short for tackle, though he does have nice long arms, but ran super well. The Packers care on the offensive line a ton about broad jump. That was a good test for him. 31 on the bench is really impressive, especially for a guy with long arms. But like I said, at 326, they're going to try him inside first. I mean, really, the Kingsley Suamataia pick, as I mentioned, would remind me the most of the Sean Ryan pick.
Yeah, and Sean Ryan, I don't know what to make of that dude, to be honest with you. I mean, they tried the whole rotation with him and running, which I thought was dumb at the point, but it motivated running or whatever, and running played much better. after LaFleur started doing that, just like he was screwing around with left tackle the same. That's the thing that blows my mind more than anything else. Like, you heard Stanovic not commit to the left tackle. You heard LaFleur not commit to the left tackle. And yet nobody's talking about this team possibly moving up to take one of the two premier left tackles in this draft. That's I'm kind of blown away by that. That they're just going to let Rasheed Walker go out there and play left tackle again and think he's going to be fine.
Yeah, we're going to disagree on that. You and I are going to disagree on that. Sheed was legitimately good for the second half of the season. And I'm not saying that they absolutely won't. And by the way, I think the backup left tackle, if anything were to go, I mean, they have two. The backup left tackle is probably Elgton Jenkins, who played well there.
As long as it's not Dillard, that's fine.
And ultimately, although Dillard was fine in Philly, I'm not going to defend Dillard's play in Tennessee. Dillard played decent, not like Pro Bowl level, but you go watch his Philly tape at left tackle. It was fine. I'm actually excited for them to give Dillard to Stanovich. I am. And Butkus, and see, you know, kind of what they do, what they're able to do. And I know he's 28. It's a late, you know, development track. We're talking about development tracks, but Mike Leach, God rest his soul and God bless him, is an innovator
yep.
to no end. What he asked his offensive linemen to do was just not NFL stuff. And you'll see that with a lot of Washington State offensive linemen that have these amazing pass pro numbers. And it's like, you know, Cole Madison was a great who knows what would have happened with Cole, but Cole Madison was a great example. The guy the Packers took in the fifth round. It's like, oh, he doesn't allow the sacks. If you watch Mike Leach offense, the ball's out. There are no sacks. The ball is out. That's his offense. So, I knew Dillard was going to be a project. Anyway, in general, I will just say Sheed was good. And part of that is bias. I actually had Sheed as a top 100 player. I was blown away that he was available in the seventh round.
Why do you think he fell?
A part of it, frankly, is I think a lack of athletic testing. I think he was hurt. And that doesn't explain four rounds, right? But he didn't do anything. I think it was an injury, but he didn't do anything. He didn't run. He didn't do agilities. He didn't bench. He didn't jump. He didn't do anything. So he just became this total enigma. You know, from an athletic testing standpoint, who knew if he was a terrible athlete? You try to take some of that on film, but there's a reason these guys do the combines. There's a reason these guys do the pro days. That information is important. And you'll see guys go much higher that are too hurt to test. You will. But I think that was a big part of it. And I think he was a bit of a project, and you saw certainly that improvement. But I think he's an above average NFL left tackle. Not elite. He's not Bakhtiari. He's not anything like that.
Correct.
But
yep.
I think at the end of the season for the last 10 weeks, he was an above-average NFL left tackle, specifically, certainly an above-average pass protector, and that's what you're doing. You're trying to keep Jordan Love alive. If you can pay that $580,000 a year, that's tremendous.
Sure.
That's an unbelievable value to have your left tackle making no money. And it goes beyond that financially, but he's also in a league where a lot of the linemen stink, and specifically some of the left tackles stink. It's just pretty cool to have a 24-year-old left tackle that can play on a rookie contract.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously get that. I'm just saying, if you go back and look at the end of the season, Stanovich wouldn't really commit to him. Said, oh, he's got a lot of growing to do. I'm not going to sit here and say he's a left tackle of the future. LaFleur wouldn't go down that path either with him. So you listen to both of those. I'm just like, okay, well, maybe left tackle is going to be something they're going to explore, or they're going to move somebody else to left tackle. But nobody's really talked about it since those two press conferences. So I think the understanding is now that that's his job. And really what we're talking about here is, where is Zach Tom moving? Number one, is he moving, or is he staying at right tackle? And if he's staying there, then you're really only looking to replace a guard, and that's it on the line.
Exactly. And that's the big thing to me, too, is we're talking about resources. You know, when we're talking about the draft, what's the best use of resources? And look, like, Sheed may never even be a Pro Bowler. And I get that fully. And I think there are plenty of project type tackles that you could even take in the mid rounds if you're looking, you know, to try and do something different at the left tackle position. I would not, and Fashanu, I think, could even potentially have like a Bulaga-esque fall. I don't understand what's going on with Fashanu. I think he's a very, very clean prospect. But same with Alt. I would not burn the draft capital that you would have to burn to go up to get them to upgrade yourself from Sheed to whatever that is. That upgrade from Sheed to Fashanu, certainly after getting the top six, the upgrade from Sheed to Alt, you would almost have to give away what it takes to go get a quarterback.
But what if that means that Sheed goes to right tackle and then you're able to slide Tom into guard?
I still don't care that much because Myers to me is fine for a year, and then you look at the good centers that they've actually had.
Oh, yeah.
They took yep. Corey Linsley in round five, and they took Scott Wells in round six.
Yep.
They can make up a center, right? Or go find a good guard, or maybe Ryan develops and is awesome, and you take another guard, and Elton Jenkins can play some center. You know, they've got a lot of different things that they can do on the interior. I definitely understand where you're coming from. I really do. I frankly am fine with them taking a tackle or an offensive lineman at 25. I don't know that I think it's the most likely outcome, but I'd be very fine with it. I just would not burn, like, basically quarterback trade-up level resources to go get a left tackle in the top six when how many times have I shown that I can take, like, the guy drafted 130th and make him a Pro Bowler?
Absolutely.
How many times do the Packers have to do that? They have to prove that they can take TJ Lang, Josh Sitton, JC Treader, David Bakhtiari, Zach Tom, whatever. And you know, the Bulaga thing worked out, and that's great. But the Sherrod thing didn't. The Myers thing hasn't. The Spriggs thing sure didn't.
Oh, Spriggs.
So I'm saying, like, I don't know. To me, it's just, you know, shotgun approach. Take one in round three, take one in round five, take one in round seven. Let's see who can play.
I'm with you. Ross Uglum, who I've kept way, way too long. I didn't realize what time it was. I could just talk to this dude forever. Publisher of the Packer Report. If you think that's good, and people are texting me like, this dude's awesome, you have to get the mock draft, the draft guide that you guys put out for Packer Report. Follow him on Twitter at Ross Uglum. How do they buy the Packer Report and have it emailed to him?
So, I'll tell you, I'm going to give you guys a way that we normally only give away on the show. Promo code DAILY for 10% off, as in, you know, the Daily Bugle, the Daily Planet,
sure.
Daily Draft.
Yeah.
DAILY. Promo code DAILY for 10%
off. Wisconsin Sports Daily, the show you're on. DAILY. It works. Yeah.
100%. Hey, there you go. There you go. That's more synergy. That's like the Badger State Brewing thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Promo code DAILY for Wisconsin Sports Daily. And it's easy to find, guys. You can Google it. Otherwise, it is a pinned story on PackerReport.com. It is my pinned tweet, to my understanding. And we've been talking about it all day because we're on this quest to sell 1,000 guides. Last message I got was we have 32 guides left to sell to get to 1,000, which would be such a cool thing for us.
And
guys,
it's inexpensive. It's not expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, promo code DAILY for 10% off gets you down to $9. It's like a... I don't even know how many pages. 230 prospects. It's a very big PDF.
I think Jacob Morley told me it was 294 pages or something crazy like that.
That would not surprise me at all. See, I've got a 7-round mock draft in there. I've got 2 feature articles in there. Morley has his threshold work in there. Jacob Westendorf has a feature article in there.
That's awesome.
It's not just prospect rankings, guys. It's not just, you know, a mock draft and some prospect rankings and some scouting reports. There's some real cool Packers stuff in this guide.
Yep, I have it. I absolutely have it. I bought it last month, I think, and have it sitting in my email. I plan on using that as my reference while we watch the draft coming up Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You guys do an absolutely great job. Glad we could get you on, and hopefully we'll get you on next week and talk about these picks too.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Sounds good. Take care. There he is, Ross Uglum, publisher of the Packer Report. Follow him on Twitter at Ross Uglum. That was the longest interview that I have done in quite some time. That interview was a half hour without commercials. Is that somewhere right, Charlie? Was it somewhere in that area?
Yep, almost about 25 minutes.
Woo! Well worth it, though. That dude can bring it. Ross Uglem can. Follow him on Twitter at Ross Uglem. U-G-L-E-M. His pinned tweet, go buy it, like $9. Use code word daily, and you're all set to go. I promise you, you will not regret it. You'll buy it every year after this, and you'll be very, very happy that you did, and you'll tell all your friends that you bought it too. So make sure to do that.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.